Good morning. You're tuned to KCAW. It is 7:49 and today is Thursday, April 12, 2012. I'm Amy Gorn with Raven News. Alaska First Lady Sandy Parnell was in Sitka yesterday to honor a program that offers local fish lunches to students. The Fish to Schools program grew out of a health summit in Sitka 2 years ago. Someone suggested serving local fish in school cafeterias. The project is led by the Sitka Conservation Society and Nana Management, which handles the school lunch program for the Sitka School District. Fish to Schools was named the best farm-to-school program in the state for this school year. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
The sounds of lunchtime at Keith Kushaheen Elementary School. Students come in the door and get in line to pick up hot lunch. They can get a hot dog or rockfish scandia. It's breaded with just a little cheese on top, and it's part of the Fish to Schools program. In the middle of the multicolored lunch boxes, sitting with a tray, holding her own serving of rockfish, is Sandy Parnell, the wife of Alaska Governor Sean Parnell. She's chatting with a group of girls.
Now, do you have salmon here sometimes, too, for lunchtime?
When Mrs. Parnell asks what their favorite food item is, one of the girls confides that it's probably chicken nuggets. But the fish is good, too, and the evidence backs her up. School staff say more kids get hot lunch on the days when local fish is served, and that the portions regularly run out. This particular day is no exception.
I did check in with the cafeteria staff, and she said that fish days are always crazy, and they always serve more lunches on fish days. So there was an increase in numbers of participation.
Tracy Gagneau coordinates the Fish to Schools program for the Conservation Society. She says the program would not be possible without help from local processors and fishermen. They've offered tours of their plants to students, and fishermen have visited the classroom to talk about what they do.
Fish is the backbone of this town and of the culture, and I think that it allows them to connect deeper with where they're from and to be proud of the fish that they have here. And we have a really well-managed fishery, and I think that that's something we talk about, the sustainability component of the program, and they're proud. They love it.
The students have learned about how longlining works, how salmon fits into the overall ecosystem, and even how to cook the fish in a traditional bentwood box. Gagneau says she hopes Mrs. Parnell's visit shows her the full scope of the program.
This is an opportunity for her to see how important this program is and how well received it is. There's a number of students here who are getting to meet her, connect with her. I'm hearing that this is really awesome.
And as we're talking in the hallway, third grade student Nicholas Oliphant comes walking up with a half-torn sheet of paper towel bearing Sandy Parnell's autograph and a few others.
Her bodyguard, her assistant, and the governor's wife.
Well, what'd you think of the visit, Nicholas?
It's really cool.
Yeah? How come?
Well, just to see them here, it's really special.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really glad that they came.
Do you know why she's here?
No.
She's here because we're serving local fish in the school cafeteria, and she's honoring our program because we're one of the only schools in Alaska who's doing that.
Nicholas did not get fish for lunch today, but not because he didn't want it.
I didn't know that it was fish, so...
Caught you off guard.
Yeah.
Have you had the fish before?
Yes, sir.
And what do you think of it?
It's really good.
Back in the lunchroom, the First Lady is busy. She wears a white apron and serves fish for a little while. Then she's over to a map of Southeast Alaska where students are placing stickers where they think their fish might have come from. A short time later, she's sitting at a lunch table surrounded by students. More autograph seekers, as it turns out.
So when I sign your autograph, you tell me what's your very favorite fish.
When things finally settle down, Mrs. Parnell says she has been impressed with what she's seen.
I'm really proud of the community in Sitka, how they've all come together to bring fish, you know, the most wonderful fish in the world, to our school children. That just makes sense. And the kids seem to really be happy about it. As we were serving fish, they ran out, actually, so that's great, isn't it?
And she says she's happy to support any effort communities want to make to use Alaska-grown food resources. The bottom line, she says, is that she hopes that what she has seen here spreads.
You know, we're moving product around all the time anyway. So if we could incorporate that, you know, into bringing fish to the inland areas and bringing Alaska produce maybe to areas that don't have quite the climate to easily grow Alaska produce in. It's a challenge, but I think we're Alaskans, we're up for it.
Fish to Schools is in three buildings in Sitka, Keet, Blatchley Middle School, and Pacific High. A local fish lunch will be served for the first time at Mount Edgecombe High School later this month. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The ghost ship was not easy to sink. That was the experience for the crew of the Coast Guard cutter Anacapa. They'd practiced with their deck gun, but never used it to actually scuttle a ship. The Petersburg-based cutter gained worldwide notoriety last week when she was ordered to sink the derelict Japanese fishing boat off the coast of southeast Alaska. The vessel had reportedly been destined for scrap in Japan, but wound up in U.S. waters a year after being set adrift by the tsunami which devastated that nation in March 2011. The Coast Guard decided to sink the vessel at sea rather than risk a hazard to shipping and potential pollution closer to shore. Back in Petersburg, several of the Anacapa's crew gave a first-hand account to Matt Lichtenstein, who filed this report.
The Ryun Maru was about 160 miles off the coast when the Anacapa reached her. The cutter's crew spent the night making last-minute preparations and getting final approval to go ahead and start firing the next morning. That work included checking the derelict vessel for any radiation it may have picked up from the nuclear disasters in Japan. Executive Officer Jim Toomey says the cutter has an array of equipment for that.
Once we'd arrived on scene and began our study of the vessel, its seaworthiness, and any potential hazards that may on board, we actually used some of that radiation detection equipment, doing several passes anywhere from 30 yards to 300 yards off the vessel, and conducted basically a spectral analysis of any radioactive emissions from the vessel, and we didn't pick up any elevated levels.
Some initial reports put the vessel at around 160 feet long, but Toomey says they found it was closer in length to their 110-foot cutter. The Coast Guard didn't send any crew aboard the drifting boat, but another vessel did. Shortly before they began clearing the area for firing, a Canadian fishing boat arrived on scene to claim salvage rights. Anacapa Commanding Officer Ruben Boudreau says U.S. and Canadian Coast Guard officials had a conference call and subsequently agreed to let the would-be salvagers inspect the Japanese ship.
And they were actually able to put personnel on board as we were observing this and determined that it was truly a derelict, probably not seaworthy enough to tow back all the way to Canada, which was their plan. They reported that there were just the entire vessel was in shambles and could have sunk at any moment.
But even after being hit by the Japanese tsunami and drifting thousands of miles across the ocean, the unmanned fishing boat turned out to be tougher than she looked. Once the Canadian vessel cleared the scene, the Anacapa prepared to move forward with its task. Boudreau says they first put out repeated notices to vessels and aircraft, requiring them to stay at least 6 nautical miles away from their location. They commenced firing at about 1 in the afternoon that day. Having never done this sort of thing before, Boudreau says it was a huge learning experience.
Just trying to develop the best plan possible to sink the vessel, not knowing how long it would take or how many shots it would take below the waterline. She was a very seaworthy craft, obviously coming thousands of miles from west to east across the Pacific, and she didn't want to go down easy, that's for sure.
They started by firing 220 high-explosive rounds from their 25-millimeter deck gun. The cutter had to stay at least 300 yards away from the target vessel for those rounds to fully arm themselves and cause the most damage. At the same time, according to Boudreau, even the relatively calm seas caused enough movement to make it challenging for the Anacapa to hit the other boat below the waterline. After the high-explosive rounds didn't seem to do the trick, Boudreau says they eventually fired off another 220 rounds of regular non-explosive ammunition. According to Boudreau, that allowed them to get closer and make shots that were somewhat less destructive, but more accurate. Petty Officer 2nd Class Brandon Thomas fired 55 of those shots.
It's actually incredibly complicated because you got a vessel with a waterline that keeps changing because the swells keep moving it up and down, and our vessel's moving in relation to it. So the mount moves pretty freely, and you kind of try and track on there.
The Ryun Maru eventually sank at 6:15 p.m. Operations Petty Officer Rob Owens was on watch at the time.
It started sinking stern, and starboard quarter, and then once that stern caught up to it all throughout, it just it almost kind of swung underneath the bow, and it was bow up, and then and just sank, you know, just stern first.
The decision to sink the boat had come from much higher up in the Coast Guard, which saw the unlit, unmanned vessel as a serious danger to navigation in busy shipping lanes. But the Anacapa crew saw that firsthand. Owens says when they arrived, there were at least three large tankers in the area, one of which couldn't see the derelict ship on its radar and radioed for its location. Owens and the other crew were confident there was minimal fuel on the vessel, which had been destined for scrap in Japan. The morning following the sinking, a Coast Guard aircraft on scene reported there was a little bit of debris and a light sheen that the agency said would dissipate quickly at sea. Anacapa Commander Boudreau says he's proud of his crew and he thinks their experience may help the Coast Guard deal with future situations like this.
There's going to be some great lessons learned as a result of this, especially moving forward and thinking that there may be some more vessels along the way that are going to be drifting in our direction. They're estimating a million or 2 million tons potentially of debris that is going to be following that same path and hitting Hawaii, British Columbia, and Alaska in the next year or two.
The Ryun Maru sank in 6,000 feet of water. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
An 18-year-old Ketchikan High School student remained jailed Wednesday on charges of making a terrorist threat at the school. The Ketchikan Daily News reports Ferris Hayward was overheard making the threats Monday morning. Police were notified, and after learning Hayward had left the school, officers contacted him at his home. Police Chief Alan Bengard says no weapons were found at the home. Hayward is charged with felony terroristic threatening. His bail is set at $5,000. Mostly cloudy skies expected for today in Sitka around 52 degrees. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka. It's 1 minute after.